Al Jazeera Podcasts.
A report by a UN special rapporteur accuses Israel of genocidal acts in Gaza. The entire area has been classified as a military objective, making all Palestinians there potential targets. So, how does the report reflect the reality on the ground? I'm Mohammed Jamjoum, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests. In Ramallah, Mustafa Barghouti, Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative. In Rafah, in southern Gaza, Yusuf Hamash, Gaza Advocacy Officer at the Norwegian Refugee Council. And in Canterbury, Jeffrey Nice, a human rights lawyer who prosecuted former Serbian leader Slobodan Milosevic. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Yusuf, let me start with you today. What's the situation like on the ground right now in Rafah? And does the Special Rapporteur's report do an accurate job of reflecting what Palestinians in Gaza are facing right now?
Yeah, first of all, the situation in Gaza hadn't been changed except for the wars in the past few days. And we were hoping recently that we are passing through Ramadan. That's going to be a glimpse of hope that they will figure out a solution somehow to ensure dignity of the living conditions of Palestinians who are trapped in the southern part of Gaza and the northern part of Gaza. But unfortunately, it didn't happen, and nothing had been changed except for the wars. We had more waves of displacement from Khan Yunis, Hamad area, and other areas in the middle area also. Yeah, and unfortunately, we were hoping that it could be a gleam of hope, but unfortunately, it seems that this endless nightmare that families and people are going through in Gaza is not going to end soon. And the UN reports, especially with Francesca Lepenese, is much appreciated. And I think it highlights part of what's going on here. But I don't think that any reporting could justify and could clarify exactly what's going on here, because this is a catastrophe that we never witnessed in our recent history before.
Mustafa, one of the things the report says is that genocide is a process, not an act. It goes on to say that genocidal intent and practices are integral to the ideology and processes of settler colonialism. I want to ask you if you think that the way the report laid out its context of genocide when it comes to Palestine and Palestinians is accurate.
Absolutely. I think the report is very accurate and it is fair and honest. And the fact that it linked the acts of genocide that we see today in Gaza to the Israeli behavior in general since 1948 is absolutely correct, because the genocide started back in 1948 when Israel forced no less than 70% of the Palestinian population. Israel destroyed 520 Palestinian communities, committed 52 massacres to force people out. And it is important to mention that 70% of the population of Gaza are refugees from that period, from that time in 1948. And they have been subjected to repeated occupations. The occupation in 1967 was not the first one. They were occupied in 1956 too. They were subjected then also to massacres. But today it is much clearer than any time before, mainly because media is catching what's happening and is reporting it. Before, it was not reported, and the world could not see what was happening. But in reality, I totally agree with the conclusion. This is a process of genocide that is very much linked to the Zionist racist ideology of settler colonialism. An idea that is expressed repeatedly by Israeli leaders that their goal is to take away the land from Palestinians, to steal the land from Palestinians, and to force them out of their land. This is what Zionism represents.
Jeffrey, Francesca Albanese's report says that there are reasonable grounds to believe Israel is committing genocide in the besieged Palestinian enclave of the Gaza Strip. Do you agree with that opinion?
I don't think it's going to be very helpful for me to agree or disagree with it, because for a commentator to make anything like a final decision on culpability of this kind is not going to help your viewers very much. What is likely to help them is to understand the basis upon which people like Albanese and also organizations like the International Court of Justice make the findings they do in each case qualified as being preliminary findings. And she makes her finding on the basis of looking first, or rather second, but in reality first, for the evidence of intention. And genocide is a crime of intention. Without the intention to destroy in whole or part a group, there's no possibility of genocide. Everything else follows that finding. Now, that finding can be made either by looking at what people say, and she refers to things said by the leadership, or what is done, which it might be thought is consistent only with one of the ways in which genocide may be committed. And she refers specifically to the level of killing, the quantity of damage done. So it is clear, as other commentators closer to the action than I am, people who are on the ground, that there is indeed material of the kind she identifies to support a possible finding of genocidal intent, and then to support one or other or all of the three ways in which she says that genocide may be committed. So I think it's a very important report, and in particular for the reasons touched on by Mustafa. It's a report which sets out that which is unspeakable in the mouths of the Western powers who bear such a responsibility for the tragedy that has developed, for which they played a part right at the beginning, going back to the beginning of the 20th century, not just after the Second World War, and in respect of which they have been dilatory, to put it mildly, in ensuring that there was either a one-state or a two-state solution to a problem that was bound to arise if you had two groups of people wishing to occupy the same piece of land. That needed careful preparatory management by the external community. It did not need the power of the West to side with one side. So the outcome of failure to do what should have been done may, of course, be said to be that which we have seen. Going back to your question, there is clearly material upon which informed people closer to the action than I have found that genocide is indicated. And it's a tragedy.
Jeffrey, you mentioned the fact that the report highlights these statements that have been made by senior Israeli military and government officials. I want to play for our viewers a soundbite from the defense minister of Israel, Yoav Gallant, after October 7th. Let's take a listen to what he had to say, then I'll ask you about it.
I have ordered a complete siege on the Gaza Strip. There will be no electricity, no food, no fuel. Everything is closed. We are fighting human animals, and we act accordingly.
So, Jeffrey, as I said, this is one of the statements, one of the many statements by Israeli officials said after October 7th, highlighted in this report, also highlighted by South Africa in its case against Israel, its genocide case filed at the International Court of Justice. Just how damaging are statements like this going to be in the long run when you're talking about potential accountability or legal repercussions?
Two different types of importance. Do you mean importance in terms of an accountability process for securing convictions, or do you mean important for the effect that it may have on people working under the command of the person concerned? It's important in both respects, but dealing with the second one first, because that's the critical one. If you're in a war of this kind, or conflict of this kind, the things you say as a leader may be taken on board by those who are at the front line, and affect the way in which they respond or do not respond to what they must be instructed, and probably have been instructed, are the laws of war. If you say things of the kind said there, it's going to be much harder for you as a superior officer to criticize those beneath you if they act outside the laws of war. So it's extremely important and very dangerous from that point of view, as indeed may have been the observations. It's also important, of course, because it may well reflect the mental state of that leader and his colleagues, if and when any of them, as they must be, are brought to a criminal accountability process. Just bear in mind, last point, of course, in moments of great crisis and tension and the attack of the 7th of October, viewed suddenly as it can be, would generate terrible reactions in people. People may sometimes say, oh, I said that in the heat of the moment. Whether that is what will be said by these people, and if it was said, whether it will carry weight, is not for me, but for a judge or jury to decide in due course.
Yusuf, the report discusses how Israel's assault has decimated Gaza's already fragile healthcare system. We're talking about sustained attacks and destruction of hospitals and health facilities. How dire is the situation currently?
And to understand more the situation related to the health sector, out of 36 hospitals operating in Gaza, we have four. Let's talk about Rafah as a city. Rafah have one main hospital, Najjar Hospital, has 60 beds. This is the biggest hospital that we have operating in Rafah. After the last incursions in Gaza City, it was a Shifa, while they were trying to operate it back again, and recently in Khan Yunus, Nasser Hospital. And I think we need decades to recover in terms of health sector and the infrastructure of Gaza as a city. But the entire health sector have collapsed long time ago. And unfortunately, related to that, we are not seeing real action or real interference trying to increase the capacity of the hospitals here or trying to avoid targeting hospitals and healthcare facilities. But yeah, unfortunately, the international community and world leaders have failed us, especially in that. There is red lines that have been crossed, have been breached. And unfortunately, we were seeing a red line after a red line after a red line that have been breached and crossed. And we didn't see any feedback from the international community and the world leaders towards all of these acts. World now is busy in the terminology, if it's a genocide or not, and if it's massacre or not, and they are not looking on the act itself and the human loss that we are facing and the circumstances that over 2 million people are going through. We have the entire health system already collapsed. The food security already also is collapsed. The majority of the housing unit have been destroyed. The entire infrastructure of Gaza as a city have been destroyed. And unfortunately, now the debate is about terminology. It's unfair how the world is reacting towards 2 million civilians.
Mustafa, it looked to me like you were reacting to some of what Yusuf was saying there. Did you want to add to the point he was making?
Absolutely. I want to add about the health situation. But before that, I want to link the video you have shown of Gallant, the Minister of Defense in Israel, what he said. Genocide is about intention and actual practice, actual things that people do. In this case, what Gallant said was implemented. He declared that he will impose siege on Gaza and that Gaza will not have any access to life-saving material, whether electricity, water, food, or any other things. And that's exactly what they are doing. Now we face 700,000 people are starving in the north of Gaza. And the whole of the Gazan population, 2.3 million people, are suffering from malnutrition. As a matter of fact, because of lack of access to clean water and proper food, there are 1 million people now in Gaza sick, and many of them are dying. More than 30 children have already died because of malnutrition and because of starvation in the north. And it goes on. But in addition to that, he declared we will treat them as human animals. And look at what they have done. They used indiscriminate bombardment. They threw on Gaza 70,000 tons of explosives. That is like 30 kilograms of explosives for each man, woman, and child. The outcome is shocking. 115,000 people killed or injured, if we count those under the rubble. 39,000 people killed, including 14,500 children, 9,500 women. The picture is clear. And more than that, the wounded people are not allowed to be treated. The sick people are not allowed to receive treatment. 10,000 cancer patients cannot get any medication. That is the reality of what Israel is doing. What is that if it is not genocide? the worst kind of genocide. And regarding the health sector, look at what they've done. They destroyed the infrastructure so that the life would be impossible in Gaza. Mm-hmm. They want to make the place unlivable. 32 out of 36 hospitals were destroyed. 124 ambulances were destroyed. 341 health workers and doctors were killed. 300 others were injured. 240 were interrogated, and more than 90 were arrested and tortured by Israel. Mm. Look, journalists were killed. All universities, schools, everything, water pipelines, infrastructure, including sewage systems, a whole destruction.
Mustafa,
this is genocide, of course.
Mustafa, yeah, may I just ask you, because you're talking about the attacks, and I want to ask you about the fact that Albanese's report is calling for an immediate arms embargo and sanctions on Israel. Is this going to put any pressure on Israel? Also, the fact that the UN Security Council resolution was passed that was calling for an immediate ceasefire, does that, in your eyes, mean that UN member states are growing more impatient? I mean, could this all lead to any change in how Israel is acting?
Absolutely. And you know what is the main factor that is pushing in that direction? It's not the rationality of the world's governments, who many of whom have been complicit in the war crime. And in particular, I accuse the United States of America for doing that. But the public pressure is changing governments' policies, like we have seen in Canada. And of course, when Canada declares they will not supply Israel with arms, that makes an impact. And I think the United States of America has now the responsibility of immediate cease of all supplies of military weapons to Israel till Israel accepts ceasefire and stops this terrible act of genocide that is happening against Palestinians. And let me tell you, the people's reaction, this world revolution in solidarity with Palestinians does have an impact. But many of the Western governments, in particular the United States of America, and some European governments have really been complicit with this terrible crime, and they have to change their position, because there will be a day when they will be also accused of participating in these war crimes if they don't stop. Let me remind you that this is exactly what happened to the Jewish people during the Holocaust. The Nazis conducted Holocaust, but many others were complicit with that. And that's the same mindset that allowed the genocide and the Holocaust against Jewish people is the same mindset that is allowing this terrible genocide and Holocaust against Palestinians. Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey, I want to ask you about another aspect in the report. The report says that after October 7th, Israel's characterization of Gaza's civilians as a population of human shields reached unprecedented levels. And it talked about the fact that Israeli military leaders and government leaders were framing civilians in Gaza either as Hamas operatives or accomplices or human shields among whom Hamas is embedded. I want to ask you about the fact, I mean, international law does not permit a sort of blanket claim that an opposing force is using an entire population's as a human shield as an excuse to take any action they want on the battlefield, right?
Correct. And the author of the report makes this very point, that at each individual act of war or aggression by the Israeli Defense Force seeking to rely on human shield as a justification for what they're doing, at each individual act, there has to be justification for what they do, and blanket defenses or justifications of this kind will not do. And it's worth looking at the horrible escalation of events in Gaza, going back to the beginning when commentators and officials with greater contact on the ground were reluctant defined as against Israel, who had his hostages to find and so on, and was facing a terrible attack on the 7th of October, was reluctant to find criminality. But quite rapidly, it became clear that the justifications in the law of war for doing what Israel was doing seemed rather hard to meet so far as the test is concerned. And once you started using, or once it was clear that dumb bombs were not were being used and not bombs that were target-specific, with an inevitable consequence of so-called collateral damage, which means deaths of civilians, it became harder and harder to justify. And I think this is going to be in what I trust will be an accountability process. And let me come back to that after I finish this sentence. I think at the accountability process, Israel had better be ready with written or taped or computerized records of its justification, bomb by bomb, bullet by bullet, for what it has done, because that is what will be looked for,
Jeffrey,
in a criminal court.
I'm sorry to interrupt. It's just that we are starting to run out of time. I want to ask you, from your perspective, what's the likelihood of seeing prosecutions going forward?
Unknown, probably small, because the Western powers have no desire to see Israel being, or Israeli leaders being put on trial, and a large number of potential Hamas defendants have been killed on the spot, and the others may be dealt with, or they may not, within the Israeli criminal system. For the benefit of the world, we should all press Biden, and we should press our own prime minister here in England, to say that there will be an accountability process, and anyone against whom an arrest warrant is issued, for example, by the International Criminal Court, including Mr. Netanyahu himself, then his allies will hand him over, because the interests of justice are greater than the interests of politics in this case.
Yusuf, we only have about a minute and a half left. I want to ask you about what kind of trauma all of this is causing for Palestinians in Gaza, for those who have survived, for those who have witnessed so much death and loss, so much fear. How are they able to cope with that?
Fortunately, they have to cope. It's not a matter of decisions. They are pushed. They have to cope with the situations more related to the responsibilities towards their extended families and children and all of that. And in terms of trauma, we already were trying to recover from previous escalations and previous war. This is this endless nightmare that we had even before 7th of October, that it's not there. We had a previous experience, and I can calculate many of them. And I sincerely believe we need decades to recover mentally and to become stable in our life. And I think also Gaza, as Gaza itself, after all of this mass destruction that we are seeing all across Gaza, it's not only that we need years to recover mentally, we need years to recover in terms of infrastructure, reconstructing, which is unfortunately not clear in our horizon.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the discussion there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Mustafa Barghouti, Yusuf Hamash, and Jeffrey Nice. This episode was produced by Dermot Fleming, Umm Kulsoom Sharif, Iman Hamdan, and Jimmy Gerahun. Studio sound was by Deepak Pushkaran. The program was edited by George Florokapis, Zainab Badr, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. Tune in on Thursday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, will the UN Security Council ceasefire resolution have an impact in Gaza? That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.